On this episode of Inside the Cleveland Browns, we meet defensive quality control coach Tony Tuioti.
We learn about a Browns fan who drives over 200 miles each Sunday to watch his favorite team.
And our players get the opportunity to design their own new Browns uniforms.
All that and more coming up next.
Good morning, Dog Pound. Welcome to another edition of Inside the Cleveland Browns. We come to you from inside the Browns team video room, where this is where the Browns get all of their video after practices, after games, and they break it all down right here for you. I'm Dustin Fox alongside Sarah Karn. Sarah's back from her tropical vacation. Sarah, how'd it go?
It was great. It was a little rotation of beach pool, so it was nice. But so much going on here. I'm happy to be back.
Well, while you were away catching all those rays, there was a little bit of action that was taking place. Browns receiver Andrew Hawkins, he had twins. Andrew and his wife Keisha, welcome two baby girls, Aubrey Ray and Autumn Rose, into the world. Twins are definitely a game changer.
Oh, yes. I don't have twins, but I can imagine that they definitely are a lot of work. But Hawk's no stranger to hard work, so congratulations to them both.
Yeah, and in just 9 days, Hawk and the rest of the players are going to be back here in Berea to begin their off-season workouts. They're going to be learning new schemes, new drills, as they try and implement things for the 2015 season. And one of those coaches that's going to be responsible for helping the players get all that put in is defensive quality control coach Tony Tuioti.
Hi, my name is Tony Tuioti. I'm the defensive quality control coach working with the defensive line. Basically, I assist Coach Weaver in the defensive line, preparing the defensive line throughout the week with offensive line cut-ups, practically drawing up all the run games, schemes that we'll see throughout the week, and helping them during individual drills. Coach Petten, we have a mutual friend that actually played for Coach Petten while he was coaching at the Ravens. His name is Mike Smith. I had a chance to work with him after he retired from the Ravens. He came to work at the University of Hawaii as a graduate assistant coach, and that's where the connection was made about 5 years ago. So every time there was a Pro Bowl, Coach Petten would come over to Hawaii, so that relationship was built back then. So when the opportunity for the Browns came, he sent me a text and a phone call asking me if I'd come over, and definitely excited to be here. It was a big transition coming from the South Pacific in Hawaii to Ohio. My first 30 days here, I've never worn jeans and shoes in that many consecutive days, so that was a record for me coming here. I remember my first day of work, I was driving with Coach Weaver to work, and I looked at his car and there was icicles on the bottom of his car, and I had to take pictures, and I've never seen that before. So it's been a big culture change, but it's been great. A lot of great learning experiences, a lot of great people here. You know, as a coach, you want to be a teacher first. You know, you're dealing with a lot of different personalities, a lot of different learning styles. So, you know, that's definitely helped me. When I was going through my graduate program, one of the things I wanted to do is be a high school football coach, and I did that, and I love working with young men. I had a chance to work with players at all levels, from high school to college to now here in the NFL. And to me, the most important thing about coaching is just developing a relationship with your players, seeing them be successful as football players, but also, to me, see them be successful as human beings. I think that's one of the most important things to me, is not only the what they can do on the field, but who they are as people and how they can affect people that are around them. And I think that's such a big responsibility that, you know, NFL players hold, football players hold, whether in college or high school. They have an opportunity to affect the community and people around them. So to me, I think that's the most important thing.
He drops the throw, pressure coming, and he gets sacked again. Desmond Bryant, tee him up again.
You know, I think for us to get better as a defense, is just to continue to grow on our fundamentals, things that we've been successful at last year. We were one of the top defenses in defending in quarterback rating, putting pressure on the quarterback. We've done a great job in winning on third downs. In order for us to continue to get better, I just continue to learn the scheme of the defense. We've done a great job in the first year, and to get better this next year is just to do what we need to do in OTAs in terms of technique and fundamentals.
All right, Hawaii is definitely on my bucket list of places I want to go. Now, I can't imagine coming from Hawaii to Cleveland. That's such a huge change.
My goodness, I can't believe he had to wear sandals every day. Now he's got to wear jeans and winter coats. I do feel bad for him for that, but we are definitely glad to have him here in Cleveland.
We sure are.
All right, Dog Pound, keep it right here because when we return, we meet a fan who has driven over 56,000 miles to follow the Browns.
I'm about loyalty. Number one, loyalty.
Joe Hayden sits in our Browns Blitz hot seat.
Favorite place to go in Cleveland.
And stay tuned for your chance to win tickets to the uniform reveal.
Welcome back to Inside the Cleveland Browns. Now, Dustin, question for you. What is the furthest you've traveled to watch your favorite team play?
Well, I'll keep it simple for you. How about 45 miles from Canton to downtown Cleveland to watch all our sports teams?
Oh, wow. Okay, well, I think our next fan has you beat. Mm-hmm. His name is Wilson Warner, and he's been a season ticket holder since 1980. And he's traveled over 56,000 miles to watch his favorite team play each Sunday.
I can't wait for the season to kick off. I mean, if you're passionate about football and the Browns, you got an extra step that day when you get up. You get up, you get in your vehicle with your buddy, we're pumped. You know, as soon as we hit Cleveland City limits, we both look at each other, and I've said it for years, the sun always shines in Cleveland, always. Where I did work for the city of Mount Vernon, they used to tease me, you know, why don't you live in Cleveland, commute to work? I used to travel to Cleveland up to 50 times a year. Oh, the commute's not bad, I could do it with my eyes closed. People call me, if they got a Cleveland question, directions, I don't care what it is about Cleveland, Ohio, I don't care if it's a restaurant, they call me. So I am the Cleveland connection. I've been dubbed that down here on radio, the newspaper. This is an article they did on me June 1984, A Man for All Cleveland. Made a lot of people Cleveland fans in my own right, I guess. My neighbor girl next door, she just made me that about a month ago. She's 13 years old. She made that little sign. Yeah, and she's a Cleveland fan. She, on Facebook, she's a Browns fan now. My wife, Teresa, she loves it. In fact, she's very, very good about it. I'm about loyalty. Number one, loyalty. And I've always been loyal to Cleveland, always will be till the day I die. So I've saved all my programs, wrote down all their names, the attendance, the weather. I got all that stored away. There's a lot of things I can't even show. I just got so much. I got a wine bottle that's in my Cleveland room, and it was sent to me by Carmen Policy. He used to be the president of the Browns when they came back with Al Lerner. This, I've been collecting autographs on this jersey since I started in 1996. My main one and the very last autograph ever signed in Cleveland Stadium by Autogram, there it is. 1955 Cleveland Browns World Championship ring. I keep it in the safety deposit box and I get it out for special occasions like today. That's probably my most special Browns moment, was being down on the stadium turf, holding the American flag, and being a veteran.
Our next story features three Special Olympic athletes who used their devotion to sports to foster new skills in their life, and it all started with the Browns.
We have a great opportunity with the Browns giving us this, the festival that they do every year. The kids look forward to it. They're excited. They love how they do the obstacles. They get to meet some of the alumni Browns and some of the new players. You see smiles from the time we get on the bus to the time we come back.
It really brings awareness that these kids can achieve anything that they put their mind to. Katie, I've known for a year. This is her first year in my class. And Sean, I've had him when he was in eighth grade. I'm so proud that he's still with Special Olympics, and I'm hoping that Katie still continues to do Special Olympics after she does leave Riverside.
It's given us a positive outlook in the sense of ability that she can train to do anything. It brings it down to her level, and she's able to train, you know, with swimming and the bowling, and just gives her a nice sense of confidence. She can do anything. She will, because she'll give it a try and
never give up.
And never give up. You got it.
Nico Torres has the opportunity to meet President Obama today, and it's due because of his Special Olympics silver medal, actually, for the National Unified Bowling Tournament that he was in El Paso. So, I mean, Special Olympics opens a lot of doors for everyone, including our athletes, our partners, and our coaches.
He didn't have a lot of friends because he was very to himself. So this brought him out and made him more social, got to meet new people, and he got to help new people.
I mean, the other people inspire me, but the most inspire me is my self-confidence in my own self.
What I've noticed with Sean when he joined Special Olympics was not only did his confidence expand, but also his thought processes, because now he's having to compete with not only other Special Olympic athletes, but he's going mainstream.
Yeah, the regular ed, and they're pretty fast. Some people is fast enough they can beat me, and I can sometimes be in first place.
We're very grateful. Wanted to say thank you, not only to the Browns, but to the Special Olympics, because they've made a great impact on our family and a great impact on him personally.
Yeah.
So cool seeing those kids have so much fun out there. Can't say enough great things about the Special Olympics and the impact that they've had. Mm-hmm. All right, Dog Pound, keep it right here, because when we return, cornerback Joe Hayden is in the hot seat.
The funniest player on the team is by far.
Our players take a shot at designing the new uniforms.
I'm not going to pick it out. I would make it that odd.
And your chance to see the reveal live.
Welcome back to Inside the Cleveland Browns. Dustin, can you believe that we are less than 3 weeks away from the 2015 NFL Draft?
No, it's crazy. It's going to be here before you know it.
I know. Well, let's keep the excitement going as we continue to take a look back at the best draft picks in Browns history. Now, this one is sure to get your heart pounding.
Sight back in the pocket. Looks, throws. Touchdown, Newsom!
In the 1972 draft, the Cleveland Browns selected Brian Sipe, a quarterback from San Diego State University, in the 13th round. Sipe spent 10 years with the Browns, throwing for over 23,000 yards and 154 touchdowns. In 1976, Sipe took over for the injured Mike Phipps. With Sipe at the controls, the Browns finished 9-5, one game out of the playoffs, and a game behind the AFC Central champion Steelers. Sipe picked up where he left off in the 1977 season, leading the Browns to 5 wins in 8 games, before a shoulder injury sidelined the QB for the rest of the season. Serving as the catalyst for many thrilling moments during the 1979 and 1980 seasons, Sipe helped the team earn the infamous nickname, Cardiac Kids, for their tendency to produce heart-stuffing comeback victories. Over the course of those 2 seasons, Sipe led the Browns to 8 comebacks and 11 game-winning drives in the fourth quarter or overtime. Sipe's greatest accomplishment came in 1980, when he threw for 4,132 yards and 30 touchdowns, leading the Browns to their first playoff berth in 8 years. Sipe was named the NFL's most valuable player for his contributions that season. To this day, Sipe still holds team records for career passing yards, touchdowns, attempts, and completions.
Brian Sipe, definitely one of my favorite cardiac kids growing up.
Oh, me too. I still have my little jersey, my Brian Sipe jersey from when I was a baby. I know.
Crazy.
Well, another cardiac kid that will get you excited is alum Don Cockcroft from 1968 to 1980. Don was the team's place kicker and was responsible for many of the team's last second wins. Now retired, Don spends his time helping Browns fans remember those cherished moments.
This chew belongs to Don Cockcroft, one of only 2 men in the league who served double duty as both punter and place kicker. In his finest season as a pro, Don Cockcroft was named the leading kicker in the National Football League for 1972.
I'm Don Cockcroft. I was a third-round draft choice by the Cleveland Browns back in 1967. I came to Cleveland and had to replace one of the great kickers in the NFL, Lou Groza. And once Lou got a hold of me and started working with me, along with Blanton Collier, my rookie season, I led the NFL in field goal percentage.
Don Cockcroft drills it down the middle, and the Cleveland Browns take the lead.
Cardiac kids, everybody knows, because we won so many games in the final minutes. What was it like to be on that team? You know, it was a very unselfish team. We just never quit. You know, we knew if we could hang in there, we could win. And Sipe, of course, was MVP of the year that year. So, again, it was unique, and that was my last year. Now I look back, and I'm so glad that I had a chance to finish my entire career with the Browns and finish with that kind of a season, the 1980 Cardiac Kids.
Snaps good, ball down, kicks up. It is good! It's over! Don Cockrum kicks the field goal.
So many players, like myself, did not realize what we were doing in 1980 for the city of Cleveland and for Browns fans. Winning those games in the final seconds. We knew what was happening and we were excited, but it wasn't until later it dawned on us that the city was hurting back then. What hope we gave for the city of Cleveland. Everywhere I went, of course, I'm now reacquainted with Browns fans and whatever, and they all talked about the 19. Don, tell us about the 1980. Where's Brian Sipe? Where's Calvin Hill? Where's the Pruitts? I mean, it was like family. I mean, for 5 or 6 years, that's all I heard about, even, 20-some years later. And then I finally decided, why don't I try to recapture that season? I tell people that this really is it's a book about life more than it is a book about football, because it's about individuals, it's about players and coaches. I don't think anybody's going to argue there's never a more loyal fan base than there is with the Cleveland Browns. Even in my era, we had some shaky years. Those people, 70, 75, 80,000 people still came to the game. And it's still happening. And the Browns, as we all know, have gone through some really tough times. And so it's impossible to explain. As I go out and do book signings and meet Browns fans, and these guys, they'll never give up on the Cleveland Browns. And God bless them. My book is dedicated to Cleveland Browns fans, and there's that special reason for that.
I think I'm going to have to get a copy of that book for myself, maybe put it on my coffee table at home.
I think that's a good idea.
All right, Dog Pound, keep it right here, because when we come back, the players weigh in on how they would design the new uniforms. All right, Browns fans, time for a little trivia. What year did the Browns first introduce the orange helmet? Was it A, 1948, B, 1950, or C, 1953? The answer when we return. What year did the Browns first introduce the orange helmet? The answer is B, 1950. The Browns added orange helmets to their uniforms because Coach Paul Brown thought that you could see the orange helmets better at night.
Welcome back to Inside the Cleveland Browns. I think it's safe to say that our two-time Pro Bowler, Joe Haden, is really good under pressure. But do you think he can handle our Browns blitz? Let's find out.
Favorite place to go in Cleveland is First Energy Stadium. The funniest player on the team is by far Dante Whitner. The number one thing on my bucket list is to play horse against LeBron.
Nice take by James. Oh, he's stuffed! LeBron James puts it down in the face of James Johnson.
Best concert I ever went to was Alicia Keys concert, where I met my wife. That was love. My first car was a Dodge Intrepid, green. If there was a movie about my life, I would be played by Denzel. I couldn't even take myself seriously.
Okay, I could see a young Denzel playing Haden. Now, what about you?
Slight problem. I want Matthew McConaughey to play me. Problem is, I don't have six-pack, and I don't have that awesome accent he has. All right, all right, all right.
That's pretty good. Right. I think you're onto something there. Well, after much anticipation, the Browns will unveil their new uniforms right here in 2 days on News Channel 5 at 7:30 p.m. Now, so many people have speculated on what these uniforms are going to look like. Well, we sat down with some of the players and asked them what they would like them to look like.
If I could pick it out, I would make it that neon orange type of color. Similar to what they wore in the Pro Bowl.
They had like silver numbers, had a Browns helmet right here. It was so nice.
I want orange jerseys. I don't care what the numbers look like. Numbers can be this big. Name don't even gotta be on the back. orange jersey.
Well, I think I definitely have an alternate orange jersey.
I would like us to have us like more orange.
Orange jerseys for sure. The good old days. When the last time? I can't remember the last time I had it, but that was pretty cool. But orange jersey, we got to do orange jerseys.
Maybe an orange uniform. That'd be pretty cool. Are we getting an orange uniform? You're not going to say anything? Okay.
We had like a flat orange with the helmets. And then, I don't know, I like our all brown uniforms.
I don't know, I really like the all browns. We rock the all browns. Those are nice.
I'm a fan of the old school, man. I like the old school browns, you know, like years and years of the same. I appreciate the tradition of it.
Our uniforms now are pretty nice. I mean, they're classic, they're standard. You know, I'm not as big on aesthetics as other people, so whatever they put in my locker is what I'll wear.
I'm just an old lineman, though. I just, you know, wear what they tell me. I leave that to the skill guys. They can pick out the uniform combinations.
Whatever makes me look as felt as possible, I think, is the best. I don't know, white on white, just late in the season, go white on white. It's just not a good look for, you know, a couple of holiday pounds, a couple extra, you know, tamales around Christmas. It's not good. So I like, you know, darker colors would be good, anything like that.
Maybe if we wear a white jersey, some orange pants, a little brown and white or whatever. I know they like to throw the brown and white in there too, but we need some orange.
I love the idea of an orange jersey. I hope that's part of the collection.
I sure do too, because it just happens to be my favorite color. Well, Dog Pound, get ready, because if you want to be at the uniform reveal, all you have to do is log on to clevelandbrowns.com/BrownsTV and enter the keyword uniform for your chance to win 2 tickets to be there with us.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of Inside the Cleveland Browns. Don't go anywhere, Browns fans, because up next, Nathan Zagura, Andy Baskin coming up with the Dog Pound Report. For Sarah Carnes, I'm Dustin Fox. We'll see you next week.